Good morning and welcome to the Good Living Show. We are so happy to be here. This is a new time and a pioneering new technology. So this is our first show where we are not all together, but can see each other. So it's kind of a fun thing to do. I'm here on Zoom while we're trying to social distance and keep everybody safe. Today we have an interesting show. It's not going to be one of those shows that is the happiest topic in the world, but I think our guests are going to make it enjoyable and informative and help us understand a little bit more. We have Stephanie Graves and Bonnie Dunitz from Compasses Care. And that is a hospice, palliative care, and home care agency. And when I looked on their website, you guys have a lot of branches. It's not like you are just Connecticut, you're all over. So welcome, Stephanie and Bonnie.
Thank you.
Good morning. Yes.
Morning. So first of all, we kind of talked a little bit before the show, which I always do with all my guests, to say, okay, these are kind of questions I have or things that I've run into or things that in my career have been those questions that everybody asks. So what is the difference between hospice and palliative care?
That's a great question. And a lot of people get that confused. So the difference between hospice and palliative care is that while they both provide comfort and want to make the person as comfortable as possible, palliative care can begin sooner than hospice care. Some people with palliative care can still receive treatments. So if they have cancer, they can still receive chemotherapy or radiation. And that's really the main difference, is that with palliative care, you can still receive some curative treatments until it's determined by the physician that the curative treatments just are not working any longer. And once that happens, then the person can very easily switch to hospice care.
I look at kind of palliative care as that early, you've been diagnosed, you've got your diagnosis. Now there are so many options out there, but I still want to be comfortable. I still want to start understanding and start getting the benefits of resources that are out there to help me through my journey now.
You are correct. Usually when we begin palliative care, and that's it, there's so many options yet, where we'll start a goal, a plan of care with the family, and we'll sit down with them and explain, okay, this is what you want, this is what we can provide. And we work with the family, and if they want to continue, whether physical therapy or whether it's chemo or whatever, drugs, we'll work with them. And we'll keep them in the loop of what's going on. We'll act as a mediator between them, their doctor, our doctor. And then we may continue that journey into hospice care.
Right. So first of all, I want to thank you guys again. Both Stephanie and Bonnie are nurses. Stephanie, I think, started her career as an OB nurse, labor and delivery. Or was that Bonnie? One of them started as labor and delivery. And it sounds like Bonnie has progressed so much in her career that she just got her doctorate. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm the older one. That's why. I'm the older one.
And both have been nurses and had different kind of career directions in the beginning, and then chose kind of as through life-changing events, it sounds like, chose to get into this hospice and palliative care field. Stephanie, why don't you tell us about your event that changed kind of who you were or your career trajectory and how it worked into the hospice field?
Sure. So I started my nursing career as an orthopedic nurse. I worked at an inpatient orthopedic rehab. And then from there, I I worked for the Department of Corrections, which is completely different than this. However, while I was working there, my grandfather fell and broke his hip. He was 98 at the time. And my grandfather was my absolute best friend in the entire world. And so through that journey, you know, we decided to have surgery for him, even though, you know, the odds were against us because of his age. We also didn't want him to be uncomfortable. So we thought the best course of action would be to have the surgery and hope for the best. Unfortunately, he didn't do so well after the surgery. And so we had to make the tough decision to put him on hospice. And my grandfather was a World War II veteran. So we were able to get him into the soldier's home up here in Massachusetts, where I live. And we signed him on to hospice. And the services and the care that were provided to my grandfather and to our family was the absolute best care I have ever seen in my life. They cared as much about us as a family as they did about my grandfather. So when I was at the Department of Corrections, my contract was coming up, and I thought, all right, you know, what path do I want to take next? I knew I didn't want to go back into rehab. And I said, you know, I really think I want to work in hospice. The care that my grandfather received is my why as to why I wanted to work in hospice. And so I really feel as if I was interviewing companies. They weren't interviewing me, because I wanted to work for a company that not only said they were going to do wonderful things, but actually did it. Because yeah. when you have to make that tough decision of going on to hospice, you want to make sure that those nurses and those chaplains and social workers are right by your side through the entire journey, because it's the toughest journey anybody has to take. And so that's why I chose Compassus, because, you know, as you said at the beginning of the show, we do have a lot of branches. We're the seventh largest hospice in the country. However, what's so great about Compassus is we keep our branches small. So when someone calls us and says they're in need of our services, we're able to get there quickly. We're able to provide that one-on-one care. We have the most amazing chaplains and bereavement coordinators who care so much about our patients and residents and their families. And honestly, I can't see myself ever working in any other form of nursing other than hospice. I love it.
Amazing. And Bonnie, how about you? I know you kind of have some similar stories, and your career has taken you in a lot of different areas, and kind of hospice has been a big part of that.
Well, you know, from the beginning, you know, you worked in the nursery, excuse me, and I did pediatrics. I did a stint in the Air Force for 4 years, not as a nurse, believe it or not, as a pilot. Wow. Yeah.
Okay. What a past. Well, this will take the rest of the show. I love it.
No. Let's go back to Compassus. But after I left pediatrics, I got into assisted living and fell in love with the senior population. And there was, again, with seniors and the Alzheimer, and that's where I found my love. Families going through death and dying, and a lot of them didn't even know about hospice. They didn't know that hospice is a Medicare benefit. A lot didn't know, and our company does so much with the veterans. We accept all insurances, Medicare, Medicaid, but again, we are grief and volunteers, and we have just so many people that also work with veterans. We have such a big program with them. I just fell in love with Compassus for what they were doing. We also have what we call is the last wish, where sometimes we had a nice little Italian couple, and they both were on our hospice, and you know, you ask people, you know, what can I do to make it better? And you're always thinking, oh, well, they're in pain. Let's fix the pain. It wasn't the pain. He wanted to take his wife out to dinner. So we got them both dressed, her hair done up. We rented a van. This was no cost to both of them. Rented a wheelchair van. We got a nice Italian restaurant. They had their dinner and their cocktails. And that's what he really wanted. And that's what we do.
I think that's so important. And I hear oftentimes, you know, when you're doing the initial visit and the plan of care, I know with us and with you guys, that's one of the questions. What are your goals? What do you want to, you know, right. What is the thing that you want to get out of this most? And sometimes it is pain relief, and sometimes it is family, and sometimes it's confession. You never know what you're going to hear, but you know, it really is our job then to figure out what we do at that point.
And some people, they think, oh, they're going on hospice. You're going to come in, give us morphine, we're going to die. Well, I have a little story that when I first started with the company, it's almost 2 years ago, we had a lady who was 102 when they took her on. 102! And again, our care team goes in, reviews her meds and, you know, different things. And sometimes we have to take them off medication because sometimes meds don't interact. And we actually had to graduate her, which she wasn't qualified for hospice anymore after a few months because she was doing so much better. She was eating. She was mobile. She was enjoying life. At 104... 2 years later, she came back to finish her journey, and we were there for her.
I think that that's one of the biggest misconceptions working with hospice is finding out the discharge, and many discharges are live discharges because people, you know, once they kind of get everything situated and they feel like they're kind of got it all in order, they get better. They rally up. They get better. They move on with their life, and they might see you again in 2 years or whatever, but certainly have improved the quality of life during that time.
You are correct.
So let's talk about kind of what the process is. And I think that that is a hard step for folks when you get this diagnosis and you're doing everything you can. You're every life-saving measure that you can possibly do. And when you get to the point that you're like, okay, enough's enough. Where do we go? Talk to our doctor first, call you. How do we make that move?
You can absolutely call us first, or you can call your physician first, and the physician can call us and make the referral. We pretty much do all of the work for you. So basically, you know, if a family member calls in or if a doctor calls in or if the person's at the hospital and maybe a discharge planner or case manager calls us, we essentially only need the patient's name, date of birth, and their diagnosis. And we will take it from there. We verify all insurances to ensure that their insurance has a hospice benefit. Medicare and Medicaid do have that benefit, and most commercial insurances have a hospice benefit as well. So we verify insurance to make sure. We will gather clinical information, whether it be from the doctor's office or from the primary care physician. The one thing that we do need is a written physician's order, basically stating that the person is eligible for hospice with a terminal diagnosis and a life expectancy of 6 months or less. Now, that does not mean that if someone makes it to the six-month mark, which we often see, that doesn't mean that they have to discharge from hospice. The six-month diagnosis really is just a starting point. So if that diagnosis takes its normal course, their life expectancy is 6 months or less. However, if they still need our services at the six-month mark, they can absolutely stay on service. So once we receive that order, we look over the clinical information, and many times we can admit the person the same day.
So let's talk about what happens after admission, because I don't think many people realize this, and you might be able to correct me if I'm wrong, but once you've been admitted to hospice, kind of the financial burden of many things for that patient almost ends, right? Do you take over, you know, a great deal of the financial burden of caring for somebody, whether it be equipment or supplies or things like that, correct?
Absolutely. So we can provide hospice care wherever the person lives. So if they live in a skilled nursing facility, if they live in an assisted living, if they live in a group home, or if they live in their home. So we can, and also in the hospital. Hospitals are obviously less common because it's an acute care setting. So we provide care wherever they live. We will go in the same day, and we will initiate a care plan. We do not have cookie cutter care plans. We design our care plans specific to every single resident and patient that we have on service. And then, so that's the initial care plan. And then we have bi-weekly IDG meetings, so our interdisciplinary team, and that consists of our medical director, the RN case manager, social worker, chaplain, home health aide. So we have meetings bi-weekly, and we discuss our patients, and we make adjustments to the care plans as needed. If we need to up the nursing visits to more frequently, we can do that as well. And so it's really based on the patient and their family and their needs. And like you said, we do cover the equipment. So for example, if someone's living at home and typically, you know, their bathroom is quite a distance from their bedroom and they're having difficulty getting to the bathroom, we can order a commode. If they're having difficulty breathing due to CHF or something like that, we can order a hospital bed. We will absolutely order whatever is needed to keep that person comfortable and safe.
And let's talk about, Bonnie, maybe you can talk about, it's not all medical. There are therapies and social workers and chaplains and people who are involved in not only working with your individual patients, but also their families. So why don't you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that is one of the most important components.
And you are correct. When we bring a patient on to hospice care, it's not just the patient, it is the family. Everybody is a part of this. And we do. We have the chaplains, we have the social workers, our volunteers. Usually when a person is open, you have an RN admitting them. The next day, you will get another visit by a nurse, and then an LPN visit the same week. So you're always getting two nurse visits a week. And they're there. They're educating the family on different things. They're talking to the family. And sometimes family isn't there. So we're doing a lot of Zoom calls and emails back and forth. And the whole team is, whether it's right. The chaplain, everybody's involved. And one thing, too, is, you know, the nurse will go out and make sure that, you know, all the formalities are made for when the patient does pass and works with the family to do that. But once the patient does pass, it doesn't stop. We don't just say, you know, thank you and leave. We continue to see the family a year. Because there's always going to be those first, the first Christmas, or the first Hanukkah, the first Easter, the first Mother's Day, the first Father's Day. And this is where family needs our support. So we will be calling on this family, even though the patient has passed on.
Thank you. So let's briefly talk about the, I mean, we couldn't have a radio show during this time and age without talking about what you have done to protect and keep your families and clients and patients safe during this pandemic. So talk a little bit about what you do with nurses or caregivers, home health aides, things like that.
Well, first and foremost, all of our staff is tested weekly, and we do the tests in-house. So we're all tested weekly. We are also doing a really good job, and we did this before, but we're doing it even more so now, where we have dedicated staff going to certain facilities. That way, we're minimizing the risk of exposure. There are some facilities who are not letting everyone in, so we're doing a lot of telephone visits. I think the one thing that is the most frustrating to me is that a lot of facilities are not letting our volunteers in, and that's such a huge part of what we do. You know, they sit and offer support and, you know, different types of, you know, whether it be music therapy or pet therapy. So that is the biggest thing that is lacking right now because of COVID. But we are doing a great job of ensuring our staff have proper PPE. We are constantly doing education to make sure that they're donning and doffing their PPE correctly. And it really, the testing weekly is huge. And that continuity of care and you know, minimizing the different facilities that we're going into. Our directors of clinical have done an amazing job of rearranging schedules to make sure that we're minimizing risk as much as possible.
Right. It is, we are in a new world. So keeping people, you know, limited to certain staff, not crossing over from one mm-hmm. place to the other. We are all learning this new way and it's not without its challenges for sure. But I think that companies have rose up to the challenges to make sure that everybody's safe. So talk to me a little bit more about kind of something that you want to tell us, whether it be a story and I'll let Bonnie go first and then I'll go to Stephanie. So we've got a few minutes left. Why don't you tell us about a story that just stands out in your mind?
Well, again, we've had so many patients and there's just so many different cultures that we deal with. We had one, a Spanish gentleman, and we made sure that he had Spanish aides, Spanish nurses. Even with the family, we have to have consent signs before we can start care. We made sure that we had everything in their language so that they would understand. And that's not easy for all, you know, companies to do. Going back to the veterans, we just had a big birthday party for one of our residents who was 100, and we got a bunch of our staff and volunteers, and it was in the New Haven paper where we had the police and the firemen and balloons, and we had the gentleman, we got him outside that, you know, he was able to see this parade in front of his house, wishing him a happy birthday. And this was all started by our staff at Compassus.
That's
so
amazing.
This is what we try to be so personal. And Stephanie said it well, we're not cookie cutter. We're going to do this, 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 and this. That's what we're different. Every patient we see is different. Every plan of care for us is different. And we're just going to make it the best we can for the family and the patient.
Excellent, Bonnie. How about you, Stephanie? Any stories or?
So I will always remember my first hospice patient. Being a nurse, I thought I was doing the right thing by going into the facility and reading his clinical before I went in and met him. I wanted to know what I was walking into because that's what I've always been used to. You know, you do your homework first and then you go talk to the patient. So I had made up in my mind what his greatest concern was. I had decided that because he has cancer, he must be in pain. I have to address his pain. So when I went and talked to him, I kept focusing on pain questions. And finally, he looked at me and he's like, I don't care about the pain. I just want someone to bring me a winter jacket so I can go outside and read a book. And I thought, oh my gosh, here I am focusing on the complete opposite of what he wants. But you know what? We got him that winter coat. I brought him outside and he was so happy to just be able to sit outside and read a book and get fresh air because he had been in a bed for so long and nobody was asking him the right questions, including me. We truly do want to do whatever it is that the patient, you know, what their greatest concern is. And what we think it is sometimes not right. From that experience, I have learned to really listen to the cues that they're giving me because, you know, I could be the best nurse in the world, but they might have something different that they want out of this journey. So that's what I've learned, and I will never forget that man.
Awesome. So before we run out of time, I do want to make sure, there we go, that how do we get a hold of you? I've got more questions and I want to get a hold of you.
Sure. So our website is www.compassus.com, and that will go directly to our main site, and then you can click on locations. Or our office phone number is...
We're going to sign off, but go onto that website and check it out, okay? Thank you for listening. Michelle Thomas with The Good Living Show.
AM 1490 and FM 105.5 WGCH Greenwich.
Democrats unload. Team of rivals. I'm Mike Moss. Democrats open their nominating convention as they hear from one-time Joe Biden rival Amy Klobuchar.
We are all now standing united behind Joe and my friend Kamala. Our